Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Minicamp day number one will get underway this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Dan Quinn supposed to speak in the 12 o'clock hour, probably close to 12:30-ish. We'll try to carry that live. David Aldridge is going to join us before that. We'll talk some NBA finals with David. J.I. Halsell is a DMVer and a longtime salary cap expert and NFL agent. He had a couple of players picked in the most recent draft. Always love to have J.I. on to talk about contract stuff and salary cap stuff because he has a very keen understanding of all of it. I had him on my podcast yesterday to really talk about the Terry situation, but we ended up talking about a lot more than that. But we started with Terry's going to be a holdout from mandatory minicamp, more likely than not. He had expressed frustration last week, or certainly there were reports that he was frustrated. And I asked J.I. to weigh in on his sort of overall thoughts on the Terry situation contract-wise here in D.C.
The challenge for him, if he's clearly number one wide receiver, even with the arrival of Deebo Samuel, I think the challenge, though, for him is he's 29, right? And I think what you see in Terry McLaurin's scenario is a situation really not too different than Chris Godwin, minus the injury part of the Chris Godwin scenario, right? So when I think about, okay, you've got a number one wide receiver, but he's 29 years old, how do you, and we know that the number one wide receiver market is in excess of $30 million per year, you're the Washington Commanders, how do you find some middle ground to give him a market-appropriate deal, given the fact, though, that, again, he's 29 years old?
Okay, so before we get to what you think that looks like, what do you think of that report last week? Is that just an agent trying to create leverage?
Well, it is likely coming from the agent trying to create leverage by saying, you know, that his client is disappointed with kind of the pace and tenor of the conversation. But, I mean, look, again, he is exactly what you want in the locker room. He's exactly what you want from a culture-building standpoint. The fact that, yeah, that we are here, now, granted, look, we've still got another, you know, month and a half or so before we get to training camp, but the fact that it sounds like they're not further along in the contract conversation, I'm sure is frustrating for both Terry and his agent.
What do you make of just the Adam Peters 49ers experience and the reputation the 49ers have for, you know, letting these things sort of drag on and getting them done at the 11th hour? Do you think some of that's in play right now?
Sure, without a doubt. I mean, that's the culture that Adam grew up in from a front office cap management standpoint. I think the key word that you mentioned there, though, is that ultimately the deals do get done. And I suspect that, you know, won't be any different for Terry McLaurin, especially given who he is both on the field and in the locker room.
So, Terry, you mentioned 29. He'll be 30 when the season starts or a week into the season. And you mentioned Chris Godwin. I think a lot of people listening would say immediately, Terry's a lot better than Chris Godwin. I think Godwin's a good receiver. I think Terry would be ahead of Godwin. Godwin's always been a number two to Mike Evans when both have been healthy. But, you know, given the age and then what else is in play here? Like, from Terry's side and Terry's agent side, what do you think they're looking for?
I mean, they're obviously looking for a deal reflective of a number one wide receiver, regardless of what his age is, and that's a deal in excess of $30 million per year. If you're telling me that Brandon Ayuk can get $30 million per year, why can't Terry McLaurin get $30 million plus per year? And the club will say, well, Brandon Ayuk's a lot younger than Terry McLaurin, so we don't feel comfortable paying a receiver who will be 30 years old in the middle of this season a number in excess of 30. So now you have to start looking at, okay, well, what's the lower tier number one wide receiver market, the high end number two wide receiver market, coupled with the fact that we just gave Deebo Samuel a reworked deal that has a 1 year average per year value of 24 or just under 24 million.
Right.
So, you know, those are all of the different parameters and considerations, right? T. Higgins is a number two wide receiver in Cincinnati and is making just under 29 million per year. And I'm not saying that Terry McLaurin is or is not T. Higgins, but again, T. Higgins is a number two wide receiver making 29. So therefore, if I'm Terry McLaurin, how can you tell me that I should make less than 29? So these are all of the different things that kind of come into play when we're trying to craft a win-win deal, both on the Washington side of this and the Terry McLaurin side of this.
Jay, I get into this a lot, especially this time of year and for the last few years when it comes to Terry, and that is, you know, what is he really? You know, to me, I've said this many times before, there is an elite group here of wide receivers. To me, it's Chase and Jefferson, and then we can start talking about tier two receivers. If you want to throw A.J. Brown into that tier one, I don't think he's at their level, but I know some people will throw him into that level. How do you view the wide receivers and Terry's place among them?
No, I agree. He's not at the elite level, so he's not going to command $35 million plus per year. But like I said 2 seconds ago, if Brandon Ayuk is a $30 million per year wide receiver, then Terry McLaurin should be a $30 million per year wide receiver just purely based upon just looking at players side by side.
Right.
T. Higgins is a number two wide receiver and is $29 million per year. Deebo is 24. And then you've got guys like Devontae Smith at 25. And so, like, that second tier of wide receivers is kind of in that $30 million per range. But again, the thing working against Terry McLaurin is the fact that he'll be 30 years old during the course of this season. So where is the middle ground? And there are other considerations structurally to kind of mitigate the risk for the club and for Terry to make more money. But I think from a pure APY standpoint, you're probably looking at a deal at the top end of $20 million per, you know, 25 plus per year.
Yeah. I mean, I've suggested that it's got to be right around 30. It's not Jamar's 40. It's not Jefferson's 35. I don't even think because of the age, it's C.D. Lamb's 34 million or Metcalf's 33 or A.J. Brown's 32. Right. I mean, but it's you know, right around where, you know, Tariq Hill signed a deal, by the way, at $30 million per year, and they're basically the same age. And to your point, and I was a big Brandon Ayuk fan this time last year. He got injured, you know, and the holdout was kind of contentious and a bit ugly, but I think Brandon Ayuk is a number one wide receiver in this league when healthy. We'll find out, you know, in the years ahead. But to me, it just feels like $30 million a year. Do you think the team will go there? And just give me an idea of what you think the structure would be.
Yeah, I think if Terry absolutely needs to have $30 million per year attached to his contract, I think what you could see is similar to what I think it was the Raiders, Devontae Adams deal, definitely the Tyreek Hill Dolphins deal, where that last year of the deal is really inflated so that it gets the total value of the deal to a $30 million per year deal. But in reality, it's really more a 27.5, 28 per year deal over those first 2 or 3 years. I think I'm not too different than you. I don't know that he's a $30 million per year wide receiver, but I do think that he's a 28 or 29. And when we're talking about what's the difference there? I mean, you're talking about the difference of like $3 to $6 million over the total value of the deal. And
right.
Don't get me wrong, $3 to $6 million is a lot of money. But I do think that he's probably in that 28, 29 per year range, because I think T. Higgins is a great kind of barometer in that he is an elite number two wide receiver. He's at $29 million per year. Terry McLaurin is a number one wide receiver, albeit going into his age 30 season. And I think those two dynamics kind of offset each other, which then say Terry McLaurin is probably around T. Higgins' $29 million per year.
Prediction, will it get done before camp?
I think so. It has to get done. I think Adam Peters has seen the importance of having kind of these pillar players in your locker room as you try to build culture, whether it was the George Kittles of the world when he was in San Francisco. Terry McLaurin is one of those types of guys from a locker room standpoint. And like a George Kittle, he is super productive on the field as well. So my sense is they get this deal done maybe just a little bit ahead of training camp so that it doesn't become a distraction as we go into camp. And my prediction is that, yeah, it's probably in that 28, 29 per year range.
All right, I want to ask you about a couple of other players. What do you think happens with Trey Hendrickson in Cincinnati?
That one's super contentious, right? And he's another player whose age is working against him, right? But he's still playing at a high level. This one, he could be this year's Hassan Reddick, in that this one could drag into the regular season with missed games for him, missed game checks and fines. But I really do see this one potentially being the 2025 version of Hassan Reddick.
What do you think he deserves? Because he's a much better player than Hendricks, than Hassan Reddick is as a pass rusher. He's a dominant pass rusher.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, but at the same time, you know, he's not going to get elite edge money because of his age. He's 30-plus years old. And
so is Danielle Hunter.
You know, and Danielle's still playing at a high level. I mean, yeah. just like Trey Hendrickson. And Houston reworked the deal that they just signed with him last offseason to reflect that.
Right.
So I say all that to say that, okay, why can't Cincinnati do that? Because Cincinnati has just a history of, quite frankly, being cheap with their contracts in terms of how they structure them and what the values are. And when they've just paid T. Higgins and just paid Ja'Marr Chase, already paid the quarterback, at some point you got to, you know, skimp, for lack of a better word, somewhere else. And, you know, for them, it might have been wise to trade Trey Hendrickson when they had the opportunity to, so that he could go get this contract elsewhere. And that's not to say that that won't happen down the road here. But he's deserving of a high-end edge contract, not elite because of the age.
You're better at this than I am, much better. If he did get traded, if I told you he got traded, you know, let's just say before camp started or during camp, what do you think the compensation Cincinnati would accept is right now?
Look, they're in a tough spot just because the world knows that the player doesn't want to be there. The world knows that, you know, they want him at a bargain basement price, but probably won't. He's not going to play under that, so therefore, they have no leverage when coming up with trade compensation. Now, given that he's an elite, or not an elite, he plays an elite position of edge rusher, an important position, I should say. Maybe it's a mid-round pick, maybe it's a fifth-round pick, but it's not going to be like a top 100 pick, third-round
really?
Pick, higher.
Really?
It's probably, yeah, it's just, if you want to go get a player, and you know that there is angst between player and his current team, it really devalues what you can probably get.
Well, then there's no way they're trading him. There's no way, because they wanted a first and a night two pick before the draft.
Right. But now, as you, this is where the other clubs start playing, like, okay, you guys can live with this headache if you want to. We're going to start getting into training camp, and we're going to start getting into the part of camp where coaches just want to eliminate distractions. And this is going to be a big distraction that Zach Taylor is going to have to answer at every press conference. at some point, if you know you're not going to give the player the contract he wants, you got to get something in return. And, yeah, it might be a fifth-round pick. But that's why I said 2 seconds ago, perhaps they should have moved on earlier, because then they would have probably gotten more in return via trade.
Do you have any idea what Nick Chubb got from the Texans?
I don't, but I would imagine it's probably something very close to the league minimum, just because
injuries.
You know, the position he plays, because they already have Joe Mixon there, because it seems like he's still working back from the knee injury. My sense is it's probably a 1 year league minimum deal.
Do you think J.K. Dobbins is in that same boat?
Well, at least J.K. Dobbins, he was, when he was healthy last year in L.A., their primary back.
Yeah.
He beat out the Gus Bus to be the primary back there with the Chargers. So I think his calculus is slightly different, but it is just a function of where we are with the running back market from a supply and demand standpoint, that a good player like a J.K. Dobbins is still out there in free agency.
How do you think it works out in Buffalo with James Cook?
Yeah, so I actually just did an interview with our old buddy Ryan O'Halloran, who used to cover Washington for the Post, and he now covers the Bills, and I was talking with him about James Cook's situation. I think here's the thing about James Cook is that he's done it for 2 years in a row now in terms of being a Pro Bowl caliber running back. You know what you have in James Cook, both on the field and in the locker room. Those are the guys that you should reward as an organization, regardless of the position, right? And what I was telling to Ryan was that with James Cook, and you've seen this with a lot of the other running back deals as of late, they're only like 2 or 3 year extensions, right? And so maybe James Cook, who's also relative to the running back position, a little bit older, like he's going into his age 26 season here in 2025. So if you do a 2 year extension, if you're the Bills with James Cook, now you get him for age 26, 27, 28. The prime of his career as a running back, and I get James Cook's going to want some more security than that, like a longer deal. But the fact of the matter is, you know, they're probably not. I think you could see a James Cook deal coming in at, say, $20 million total guaranteed on a 2 year extension. So the win for him is that he gets that kind of generational guaranteed money. But then for the Buffalo Bills, you're not having to pay him that guarantee as if, you know, he's going to be on a 3 or 4 or 5 year extension. And then more importantly, mathematically, without going into all of the math, let's just say his deal was worth just under $13 million per year, new money. When you factor in what he's supposed to make this year, which is a little over $5 million, you're actually going to end up paying him $10 million over the next 3 seasons, which is the same amount of money that the Vikings are paying Aaron Jones. So if you're the Buffalo Bills, if I can get James Cook at an Aaron Jones price for the next three seasons, you do that deal.
If I told you that, let's just say Trey Hendrickson re-signed in Cincinnati, but Washington added an edge pass rusher before the season started from the group of, let's just say, Clowney, Za'Darius Smith, Judon, Von Miller, I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody else that's out there right now. Who do you think would make the most sense?
If Hendrickson was off the market?
Yes.
All those guys you just listed are older.
Yeah.
Right? Especially when we talk about Clowney and Von Miller. I don't love really any of those options, but I do understand the need in having to go get one. Von Miller's still a highly productive player when healthy, right? Perhaps Von Miller, but again, this is a guy who is going into like year 15 of his career at this juncture. So, but Von Miller, again, is still a highly productive player when healthy. So I would probably have to go with Von Miller of that group of aging edge players.
By the way, because you answered with Hendrickson being off the market first, if we said that it actually required to get Hendrickson a third rounder and a player, say Johnny Newton, all right, would you do that deal if you're Washington? And then you got to pay him.
Yeah, and then you've got to pay him, right? I think you have to see, okay, if they're not happy with their existing edge players, then yes. I think for a team that is on the cusp of being a Super Bowl contender and maybe winning a whole thing, in this league, as the Eagles showed in the Super Bowl, you got to be able to rush the passer, right? And Trey Henderson's a guy, in spite of his age, who can do that. I think if it requires giving up a young player like Newton and giving up a mid-round pick, like a third-round pick, I think you do that deal.
Did the Steelers get a good deal in Rodgers for what they paid?
In the short term, yes, but they still haven't solved their long-term quarterback issue, and maybe they went into it thinking, we don't really like this year's crop of quarterbacks in the draft, and we already went through the Kenny Pickett experience, so let's go and let's run it with Aaron Rodgers this year with the eye towards going to get one of the young signal callers in next year's draft. But they definitely got a bargain basement deal. It's being reported that he got about $13 million as the base value of the deal. That can go up to $19 million. For a starting caliber quarterback, that's a significant bargain for the Steelers. Obviously he's got a lot that comes with him, but I think some of that is overstated, quite frankly. They've managed their quarterback room really interesting the past couple of off seasons. When you think about last year, the two-headed quarterback room of Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, who they got both of those guys at value, and then now to get an Aaron Rodgers at a value as well. Again, great short-term solutions, but they still need to find a long-term answer.
All right, two more for you. Number one is, just because I'm curious, especially after Rodgers signed in Pittsburgh, which was expected, you think Kirk Cousins just backs up Penix Jr. in Atlanta this year? It doesn't seem like there's a landing spot for him.
Yes. I think that from a Falcons front office perspective, you just view Kirk Cousins as a expensive insurance policy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that concept. Now, the price point, yeah, it is a little steep given what you paid him last year in free agency. But, he's an expensive insurance policy at the most important position on the roster. And if you are the Atlanta Falcons, you made it very clear from a roster-building standpoint, you wanted to be very, very secure and strong at quarterback. And that's why you go and sign Kirk Cousins last offseason. And go draft Michael Penix in the first round. And so you are comfortable with, having an expensive insurance policy if that means that we've got the quarterback room solidified.
All right, last one. After Barkley's contract last year in Philadelphia, I want to know if you have thoughts on the next running back that will sign a blockbuster deal that will exceed Barkley's, $20 to $21 million a year.
I mean, it could be Bijan.
Right.
I think it just depends upon, does he have a true breakout season, which he hasn't yet, right? And I think when you're the Atlanta Falcons, talking about Falcons again, I don't think that they've shown necessarily, they're not adverse to investing money into their guys. Now, they're going to have to pay Drake London as well at some point here, too. But, Bijan, I think, just off the top of my head, is probably the next guy. We'll see kind of where the Kyren Williams deal lands, because that one seems like it's pretty close, but it's not going to be an elite deal in the Saquon Barkley neighborhood. I think just because of his pedigree and if he can have a truly breakout season, Bijan might be the guy.
That makes sense to me. I was going to say either Bijan or Gibbs. I mean, we're still a couple of years away from Gibbs, but he might be the one right after Bijan.
This is year three of Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit. I think some will say, and look, he has shown that he can be the bell cow when David Montgomery is hurt. They've had some of those games, right? But particularly if they can win, at all. That kind of honeymoon after winning tends to allow guys to get paid. And so I don't think you're wrong in terms of Jahmyr Gibbs could also be another one of those guys. I think, he and Bijan might be the two guys who if the stars align, could get to that 20-plus million.
Right. I was confused there for a moment. They got picked in the same year, in the same draft, by the way, both in the first round. Thanks for doing this, as always. Glad you're well. Happy birthday to you again.
I appreciate it, Kev.
Yeah, that's J.I. Hallsell at SalaryCap101 on X on Twitter. So the contract situation with Terry is, you know, currently one of the top storylines entering this summer. Today's day one of mandatory minicamp. What's interesting is to consider what's next, because the answer to that, I think, is revealing as to what kind of roster Washington really has. I'll explain when we return. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. Don't forget, we're on the Team 980's YouTube channel as well. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. That is good for us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's assume that a deal for Terry McLaurin gets done, you know, in the next couple of months before training camp, sometime during camp. Let's just assume that that happens. What's next after that? This is an exercise that I went through last night that is very revealing of the roster. Now, not a lot of this is going to come as a big surprise to many of you, but it is interesting to kind of see what they've been doing here. You know, they went into year one in this recalibration mode, then they sort of recalibrated the recalibration by understanding they had gotten Jaden right, and they have sent a lot of draft picks, 8 in total for 3 players. They perhaps have been interested in a guy like Trey Hendrickson. But at the same time, when you consider this Terry deal and then you're like, okay, well, what's next? What you start to get a picture of is what this roster is. This roster right now, first of all, did you know this? Did you know right now of the 90 players that Washington essentially has under contract, you know, heading into this summer, Washington's average age is the oldest in the NFL at 27.7 years old. That's according to SpotRack, you know, a big salary cap tracker, contract tracker. The next oldest team isn't even close at 26.9 years old. So there's an 8/10 of a difference between Washington at number one as the oldest roster right now. You know, we don't know what the final 53 will look like, but right now they have the oldest 90 in the league. Now, Wagner and Ertz obviously skew that. So does Tressway. You know, Washington has 3 extraordinarily old players on their roster, and that helps, skew that very high, average that out very high. Is it a big deal? You know why it's not a big deal? Is that most of these players are on 1-year deals. They could completely flip this next year by signing all young players. And that's where, when you start to look into what's next after Terry, it's just interesting. First of all, for those that don't know, and I've talked about this a lot, but if you're hearing this for the first time, they can't extend Jaden Daniels now. They can't go to him early and pay him. You know, the collective bargaining agreement rules stipulate that draft pick contracts can't be renegotiated until the conclusion of a player's third NFL regular season. So Jaden can't even be approached on a new deal until after the 2026 season, so after next year, which means the earliest Jaden could, you know, have the truck backed up, you know, in front of his house and end up being the highest paid player in the league, which is a distinct possibility when we get to the offseason of 2027. They can't do that until then. And by the way, they don't have to do it then. Remember, they have the fifth year option on Jaden Daniels' rookie contract, which they can't exercise until the same moment in which they could actually offer him an extended deal, and that is the offseason of 2027. So all of their rookies that have been drafted in the last 2 years, you know, you can't deal with until after next year for the guys that were picked in 2023, for the guys that were picked in 2024, not until after the 2026 season, and obviously for the guys that were picked this year, not until after the 2028 season. But what you start to see when you start to look towards, like, what's next, and you look at Washington's roster, is the way it's been constructed. I know we've talked a lot about this, but then you get into, okay, well, what does that mean in terms of, you know, where they are in paying players and finding those cornerstones of the franchise that they're going to pay and then build around? Well, again, number one is the quarterback. Can't touch him until 2027. Number two is somebody like Terry McLaurin, but he is getting into his 30s. We've talked a lot about that. And this is, you know, an assumption that it gets done. What happens after Terry's deal? What's next? Jaden's still a couple of years away. What's next? Well, you know, you have a lot of one-year contracts, right? A lot of guys on one-year deals, probably more than any team in the league in terms of one-year deals. You know, by the way, that's been that's been advantageous for the team as it relates to cash outlay, right? Because the aggregate value of these deals isn't significant when they're just one-year deals. That could play into what we talked about last hour about, you know, are they hamstrung at all from a cash standpoint? I don't believe so, but I had somebody ask me as to whether or not that could be playing into the Terry McLaurin situation. But in terms of what's next after Terry, you look at the guys that are, first of all, probably worthwhile signing to contract extensions. So where do you go? You can't touch any of the rookies. You can't touch any of the second-year players. You can't touch any of the players. You know, and really, when you look at the last two drafts, right, you're not touching anybody from the 24 draft until after the 26 season. Nobody from this draft until after the 27 season. And from the 23 draft, the only player really on the roster that you might have to deal with when this season is over, even though he's under contract for another year, would be Quan Martin. You know, if Quan Martin blows up into a big-time player this year, you know, he would be entering the final year of his rookie deal. And remember, there's no fifth-year option on him because he was not a first-round pick. But, you know, take him out of the equation because we don't know what he's going to be like. You're really then talking about the guys who are among the highest-paid players on the team right now. Laremy Tunsil. You know, Laremy Tunsil is 31 years old, but Laremy Tunsil's contract runs out after the 2026 season. You just traded a lot of draft capital for the guy that you believe will be your starting left tackle during this first window of Super Bowl contention with Jaden under a rookie deal. You know, is that just two more seasons of Tunsil? Doubt it. I'm sure, because that pit position has aged pretty well, you know, certainly into your mid-30s, you can play at a very high level. Tunsil's probably next, you know, this time next year when the season ends, because you can start signing your own once the season ends. You don't have to wait for, you know, March, the league calendar to begin. I would say that Tunsil is probably the next big deal they have to worry about. Who else? Well, you know, if Duron goes out and has a big year, he's going to, you know, he's got to view this as kind of a contract year like he had, you know, in 2022, because he's got 1 year left on his deal after this year. But it is a major cap hit savings if they were to release him after this year or trade him after this year. He could meet John Allen's fate if he does not have a big year. Keep in mind, Jerron Payne is entering his age 28 season. Jerron Payne still could prove to be a big-time player with a season this year. I know all of us would be talking about, right? If he goes out and has 10.5, 11.5 sacks and ends up being a dominant player like he was in 2022, we would all be sitting here saying it's not worth paying him because we see what happens when he's not, you know, in a contract year. But it's very possible, given his age, if he performs at a high level in 2025, that he would be on the list next year because he'd have only 1 year remaining on his deal. Now, they may, with a guy like Jerron, say, no, we're going to make you play out that final year on the deal. But they may have compelling reasons to extend him and to get some cap savings benefits next year. By the way, Washington, because of all of their one-year deals, are in great cap position heading forward. They're top five for the next 3 years in available cap space, and that's because they have all of these one-year contracts. Who else would be on the list? I'll give you a guy, Frankie Louvu. Frankie Louvu, at 29 years old, if he has another season like he had last year or even better in 2025, he does have 1 year left on his deal in 2026, but it might be one of those situations that they would look to extend him before 2026. That's a possibility. A Dorrance Armstrong is sort of in the same boat. A Tyler Biadasz is still in the same boat. Those were guys that signed three-year deals, so they've got another year after this one. But if they end up playing at a high level and the team thinks they're worth keeping, you know, you figure it out and get it done next offseason. But what this really reveals when you go through this, you know, like they paid Cosme last year. They obviously a guy like Kinlaw this year. They extended Bates, remember. Allegretti still got a year left on his deal. But, you know, when you look at their roster, it's significant change year to year because of all of these one-year deals. Now, they ended up bringing back several of their one-year guys. Wagner, Ertz, Igben Ogeni. I'm forgetting somebody. They also let a bunch of one-year guys walk, you know, Crowder and others they let walk after one-year deals last year. Their slot receiver from the Falcons, they let walk. Zacchaeus, they let walk. They let somebody else walk that I'm forgetting. But they brought back, you know, a guy like McNichols. They brought back, as I said, Wagner and Ertz. A lot of their, you know, roster in terms of players that are under contract beyond next year are all rookies. You know, that's a good situation to be in, to have some control over your young players. But, man, you look at this roster, and there aren't a lot of so-called cornerstone contracts. You know, Terry's will be one, Tunsil's will be one, and obviously Jaden's contract will be one. But after that, not many. They're going to have to, you know, turn the next cornerstone contracts out of the players they've drafted. You know, Connerly Jr., but that's down the road. A guy like Amos, certainly a guy like Sanris still. You know, who is proven, you know, after 1 year to be a guy that we will be keeping our eye on in terms of getting a big contract down the road. You know, you'd certainly hope that Johnny Newton would emerge into a really good player that you could, you know, get excited about paying. By the way, that, you know, potential offseason is one of the reasons you can't be going crazy with a player that's entering his 30s right now. Because in 2027, January of 2027, you'll have Jaden, you'll have Sanra still, and you may have Johnny Newton. You may have a guy like Brandon Coleman that you want to keep because he's established himself as a really solid guard in the league. So there's going to be a lot to, you know, going down the road. But as of now, when you look at like what's next after Terry, it gives you an idea that the roster is not loaded with cornerstone players at this point. They may be coming, and we certainly have one at quarterback. But they're in good shape too. That's the benefit of all these one-year deals is they've got plenty of cap flexibility. They've become a place that doesn't turn people away. They've actually become a magnet for players. So they'll have a lot of flexibility moving forward. I don't know. I thought it was, you know, just the idea that this Terry deal gets done and then it's like, you know, what's next? Really, the big one is Jaden's. But this time next year, Tunsil will have to get paid. If he ends up being the player that they think they got in the trade, hopefully a quicker answer to that than they got with Marshon Lattimore. I didn't even mention Lattimore. Lattimore counts very little cap-wise and payment-wise for the next couple of years. So it's not a bad situation, but he's got, but that also means that it's not, you know, a situation that they'd be afraid to run from, you know, if they, you know, kind of ultimately determine he was not the player they thought they had traded for. All right, a couple of things NBA-wise. David Aldridge at 12. Dan Quinn will speak to the media. We'll try to carry as much of that live as we can next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, minicamps are underway across the NFL. Notable minicamp absences include Terry McLaurin and TJ Watt, who are both attempting to secure extensions, and then Jalen Ramsey and Trey Hendrickson are both working towards trades with their teams. Laremy Tunsil and Marshon Lattimore are both present in Ashburn for Commanders minicamp. And today, with reports circling that the Knicks are preparing a tsunami-type deal for Giannis Antetokounmpo, ESPN's Brian Windhorst has responded, quote, "Right now there are no Giannis Antetokounmpo trade markets. There is no Giannis Antetokounmpo trade discussions. He has not asked for it. The Bucks are not looking to trade him." This morning, according to USA Today, Colorado head football coach Deion Sanders is currently dealing with a health issue and is stepped away from the team for the moment. The Washington Nationals have recalled infielder Andre Chaparro from AAA Rochester on Tuesday and optioned Nassim Nunez to AAA Rochester in the corresponding move. The Nats will take on the Mets tonight at 7:10. Mackenzie Gore on the bump. Nats on deck at 6:40 with Charlie and Dave on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980 and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Game 3 of the NBA Finals tomorrow night, so they've had these 2 days of rest in between games here to start. Then we go Friday, Sunday after Wednesday night for Games 4 and 5. Tyrese Halliburton has certainly attracted a lot of the conversation during these playoffs because of his incredible clutch play at the end of 4 or 5 games. Is he a superstar, isn't he? I can't put him into that superstar category, and the reasons are pretty obvious. You know, in Game 2 on Sunday night, in the first half, as they were falling behind by 23, he had 3 points and 3 assists on 1 of 5 shooting. In Game 1 in the first half, he had 6 points and 3 assists on 2 of 4 shooting. In the first half, he was great down the stretch when they needed him, including hitting the game winner. But that's not superstar play. He's had, and I went through the list yesterday, a lot of very subpar games in the postseason, and he's had some terrific games. He's a very good player. I just can't put him into the superstar category. I can't do it. He said about his performances in Game 1 and Game 2, he said, They're really good defensively. By the way, he was walking with what ESPN.com described as a noticeable limp after his post-game press conference on Sunday night. He said, they've got a lot of different guys who can guard the ball, fly around. I just have to figure out how to be better earlier in games. Kudos to them. They're a great defensive team, but I will watch the film and see where I can get better. Closed quote. Yeah, he's got to be better. You know, what we've seen, look, game one was an absolute shocker. It was strange. It was stunning. And then game two wasn't. And the games were very similar in the way they sort of went through the first, you know, 46, 47 minutes. It's just that Indiana got lights out hot at the end and ended up stealing game one. You know, the lead that Oklahoma City had in game one was hovering in that 10 to 15 range, whereas the lead in game two was more in that 16 to 22, 23 point range. A little bit harder to make a big run when you're down 18 versus down, you know, 10 or 12. Oklahoma City's better. They're a lot better. And there's only one way Indiana can steal another game or two to really extend this series, in my opinion. And that is to make a lot of shots. And when I say a lot of shots, make a lot of threes. And a lot of them would be contested. I just don't see any other way they can win this series without winning the three-point shooting, you know, battle. Because the Thunder are better everywhere else. They're bigger. They are. They've got a better creator and superstar who is, you know, a guy that can essentially get to wherever he wants to get to. And by the way, can name his number before the game starts. SGA is now in that category. Like, hey, we need 38 from you tonight. He'll go get 38. We need 28 and a few more assists. He can do that. I just don't see any way Indiana wins this series without being lights out from the three-point line like they were in game one at 18-39. And that requires them making a lot of contested threes too, because they are facing really one of the best defensive teams we have seen in the NBA Finals in years. 14-40 behind the arc in game two, 18-39 in game one. That's a big, you know, if they can shoot 18 of 39, 18 of 38, if they can make four or five more threes in a game, shoot closer to, you know, 47, 48%, they're going to be in the game with a chance to steal it. They're not going to win any of these games big. I say that, and Oklahoma City basically went to sleep at Minnesota when they were up two games to none in game three and got absolutely trounced. But Minnesota's a better team than Indiana. They just are. Indiana, to win another game or two, or to, you know, shock the world and win this series, because they are once again a minus, they're a big underdog. Minus 550 is Oklahoma City right now. They're a 5.5 point favorite on the road tomorrow night. For them to win, you know, more than another game, they're going to have to shoot lights out from behind the arc. They can't, you know, they can't dominate the paint because they're not as big. They're not as strong. They have a real difficult time running half-court offense against Oklahoma City's defense. They're going to have to hit a lot of contested threes, or this series is going to go quickly, I think. David Aldridge joins us next. We'll talk some NBA. Dan Quinn next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.